Hello, everybody. Dr. Ben Edwards here. Welcome to another episode of You're the Cure. Excited to bring in a guest today that's going to educate us on light and other things. Light, water, electrons, and mitochondria. Carrie B, as in boy, wellness.com is the website for Carrie Bennett. I'm excited to let Carrie have the mic here in a minute and share her story. Also, we have Alicia Hunt in studio with us. Alicia has been a student of Carrie's, and also Alicia is the wife of Ben Hunt in our movement lab. So real quick, guys, kind of set this thing up. As y'all know, I'm very much a proponent of working on foundational things first instead of chasing symptoms. Obviously, chasing symptoms with pharmaceuticals have produced the worst health outcomes in the entire industrialized world. And chasing symptoms with nutraceuticals isn't the best option either. And there's a time and place maybe for both of those options. But really what we need to do is focus on foundational things. And I like to, as y'all well know, preach on the four pillars of nutrition, hydration, movement, and peace. People tend to gravitate to the nutrition pillar pretty aggressively and not so much the movement and hydration. And we kind of don't talk about light. I throw it in the movement category on our four pillars because we need to move outside because the sunlight is the most beneficial light there is. And yes, there's infrared and red light therapy and different things. And we do some red light therapies in our clinic. But the thing that attracted me to Carrie is I was listening to this guy named Jack Cruz. He's a neurosurgeon, super brilliant. A lot of what he said was kind of over my head. Had to hit pause and rewind and go study some more. And then Ben Hunt told me, well, there's this gal, Carrie, and she's kind of a student of Jack Cruz, but man, she's a great teacher and can kind of boil some of this stuff down. So as I was looking into Carrie's stuff, I thought, man, this is awesome, and we need to get her on the podcast. So thus, here we are, and I'm going to be quiet now and give Carrie the floor to tell her story and to teach us about light, and maybe we'll have time to get into water, electrons, and mitochondria, too. That all kind of goes together, actually. So Carrie, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Dr. Ben. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you, excited to learn from you. I know you're super passionate about this and you have your own health journey. So just maybe spend a minute, sort of just let the audience get to know you. Tell us a little bit about your story and then we'll dive right into some of the most important things to that brought you health and that you've seen with your clients to help bring health to people.
Yeah, sure. You know, I come at this from two different perspectives. You know, one, I had to be my own client on my own healing journey. And I've also worked with clients in different capacities for about 20 years. And so, you know, fresh out of college, I had a couple of opportunities to do certain things. I was a college athlete and it really wrecked my body, actually. It was at that point when I thought I was supposed to be really at the pinnacle of health that I started to feel some deterioration happening, you know, insomnia, just pain, inflammation. And so I just started that kind of like on my own little healing journey. And at that time I said, okay, well, let me do what I know how to do. And I knew how to work out. And so I became a personal trainer. And so I started working on my fitness, like what does my body need to support it with movement? And that was great. You know, I kind of learned about changing up my movement strategies according to what my body needed. And I was able to open up a personal training studio in town and help a lot of clients that way. And in the process, I also realized I wanted to get a different viewpoint on the body than what I had learned in undergrad. In my undergraduate education, I studied biology in a very traditional sense of it. You know, I was set to go to grad school in either microbiology or neurobiology, and none of that was quite a right fit for me. Something attracted me to massage therapy school. And there I was about 2 years later studying massage therapy and viewing the body from a completely different perspective. I saw the body as more of a flow of energy and of balance and how so much more went into optimizing health than, you know, what I was really just taught in undergrad. And then, you know, so I used massage as a receiver of massage to help support my body, to support my nervous system, to support other clients as well. But I kept on getting people coming to me with more and more complex cases. So it wasn't just about getting the right workout or a good movement strategy or a little bit of peace and calm and rejuvenation from a massage. It was, well, I've got these three autoimmune conditions and I'm fed up with everything that I've been trying to do. Do you have any recommendations? And, you know, that started my own learning journey deeper and deeper into how the body operates, what causes it to kind of stray away from health, and then what brings it back. At that same time as I was getting more and more complex people to come to me, I had my first child, right? My first son was born. This was about now 12 years ago. And I just dove deep into chronic pain, chronic inflammation, digestive issues, just debilitating digestive issues, insomnia. It was a tough time. And at first I was like, oh, this is just must be what a new mom feels like. And then I realized I wasn't willing to accept that. That just didn't sound right to me. I went to where I went next. And as you alluded to as one of your pillars, I went to nutrition, a deeper dive into nutrition. And it prompted me to get a master's degree in clinical nutrition. And again, I learned a ton. It was a really great process. And I applied so much of it, from what to do to heal a leaky gut to different types of nutritional strategies to support the body. And I felt better, but I didn't feel great. And I thought, wait a second, you know, I feel like I'm eating really well. I'm moving really well. I'm supporting my body, my nervous system. What am I missing? And so, you know, as it happened, and I'm grateful for it, although I would never recommend this now, it was probably sometime around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning where I'm scrolling on my cell phone thinking, why am I not sleeping? Why do I have insomnia? Why is my kid not sleeping? Why am I still in pain? And I stumbled upon a blog by Dr. Jack Cruz. And as you said, as you alluded to, it's an intense reading and an intense listen. But he was saying, he was talking about how my light environment could be impacting either healing or disease. He was talking about circadian rhythm. He was talking about mitochondria and electron flow. And I was hooked. I went on to learn as much as I possibly could, both from Dr. Cruz's blogs and podcasts, but also, you know, the dozens and dozens of researchers and clinicians that he mentioned. I dove into all of their work as well. And it brought me to where I am today. And I'll say that after I started applying what I call light hygiene strategies and circadian strategies, I felt a palpable change in my energy, a lowering of my inflammation, and a vast improvement in my sleep in a matter of 3 days. So I knew I was onto something, and it's really laid the foundation for what I do in clinical practice. I view light as a nutrient that's missing in a lot of people's lifestyles. And it's what I use to help people to kind of start their body in on the process that it's designed to do, which is to be a thriving body. We just have to give it the right input.
Okay. Well, that's exciting because sunlight's free, number one, readily available. Everyone has access to it. But if, you know, especially for a more Western-minded person, you know, this could sound kind of crazy. What do you mean light? You felt a palpable change in 3 days. So what were the things you did? And now knowing after all your study, you know, what's light actually doing? How is light making you feel better? But what were those first initial steps?
Yeah, the initial steps were pretty simple. I woke up, I went outside at sunrise. That light was the first light that I allowed my eyes to see. I stayed outside just kind of sky gazing for about 3 to 5 minutes. And then whenever I could fit it into my schedule, about an hour later in the morning, I took about a 20-minute walk. And that was it that I started with. I didn't even start with things like blue blocking glasses in the evening until a little bit later on. And that in and of itself, that morning sunlight exposure, and it doesn't have to be sunny. It can be cloudy, rainy, snowy, but that morning light exposure really made the difference in me being able to feel better. My digestion improved. Like I said, my pain, my inflammation, like swelling or kind of just puffiness went away. And that's where I started. And that's why I wanted to really dive deep into the science, Dr. Ben, because like you, you know, at first I was like, is this too good to be true? Is there something behind this? Is this just straight up the placebo effect? But I've been on a learning journey now, and I realize how morning light in particular signals so many key things to happen in the body. And it's just a really, really beautiful thing to understand and apply.
Okay. Well, let's maybe dive into some of that, because I know there's a whole separate issue of just sun exposure on the skin. And I mean, people are used to thinking about vitamin D and get some sun, and which is obviously that's good. But skin exposure versus kind of what you're talking about, your eyeballs, sky gazing, eyeballs, light waves going through the retina to the optic nerve, to the brain, kind of teach us a little bit about what is that doing as far as circadian rhythm and neurochemistry or hormones.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, we've got a couple of ways that we perceive the light. We've got the visual receptors, which would be allows us to see exactly the objects and everything in my environment. And then we've got non-visual pathways that we take in light. And there's two different ways. We can take in light both through the eyes and on the skin. And so the eyes are a really key way to receive the light, especially in the morning. And that's because in the backs of my eyes, so the different wavelengths of light will penetrate, and specifically the blue wavelength range of light will penetrate to the backs of my eyes and connect with receptors there that start to set what's called my circadian rhythm, or help my brain tell what time of day it is. And so like to think about light, we have to recognize that it's never stagnant. The colors of light that we would see as if we were to break light up through a prism or a rainbow, the ratios and their intensities, they change predictably from dawn through solar noon when the sun is at its high point in the sky, all the way changing back till after the sun goes below the horizon at sunset. And we key in on specific colors or wavelengths of light via the receptors that I'm talking about in our eyes or on our skin that communicate different things or help to trigger certain pathways and certain neurochemical or certain timing mechanisms in the body. And so it just so happens that at sunrise, if you were to take out a little light meter that's called a spectrometer that shows you the blend and intensities of light, you'll see that that's when blue light that wasn't at super intense at sunrise starts to elevate. And it's the elevation of blue light to a certain threshold where the little receptors called melanopsin receptors in the backs of my eyes can start capturing, they start triggering those melanopsin receptors. And those melanopsin receptors have a direct pathway to the clock in my brain called my suprachiasmatic nucleus via the retinohypothalamic tract. It's a tract between the retina and the hypothalamus. And that clock in my brain then oscillates, it vibrates based on the information it's receiving from my eyes about the timing of the day. And that gets communicated to every cell in my body for each cell to start to organize its tasks. Because it would make no sense for every cell to do everything. And instead, the body has organized to do certain tasks at different times of the day based on the timing that it's perceiving. And it just so happens that sunlight or sunrise light, it doesn't have to be sun itself, but the light that can enter my eyes at sunrise is what starts to trigger daylight in my brain, the start of the day, and all of the circadian processes that are associated with that.
Okay, so if a standard American or any American doesn't do that, they wake up and the first light they see is a light bulb in their house or their probably more likely their phone, grab that phone the first thing, but then flip a light switch on and you don't see the sun. Maybe, especially if you just get in the car in your garage, pop your garage door, drive to work, maybe you get a little bit in the parking lot going into work. What does that do to you versus what you've just described?
You know, it's a great question. And what it does is it fast forwards your circadian rhythm and you miss out on what the appearance of other frequencies of light that signal some really important things in the morning. So, you know, back when we had incandescent bulbs, it was almost like incandescent bulbs just mimic a perpetual sunrise or a perpetual sunset. So while they weren't necessarily awesome at setting the circadian rhythm, they wouldn't necessarily disrupt it as much as our modern lighting. The LED bulbs that we get from screens these days and just light bulbs themselves, they have such a shockingly bright and intense wavelength range of blue that it fast forwards our circadian rhythm to sometime in the middle of the day. So instead of this gradual increase of blue light to where it reaches a threshold that it starts to signal the start of the day, and then allowing that blue light to intensify until solar noon, and then go away where there's until there's no more blue light after sunset. And so those gradual transitions that keep time accurately in my body, I jump straight to one time and I miss out on a whole host of other transitions that my body keys in on. So like you said, the majority of us are often, even as we're walking from the car into work, are wearing sunglasses as well. And so it's really easy to see how we can never get an accurate time of day communicated to that clock in the brain because of just being unaware of how important it is to sync up with that, the natural light signal.
Yeah. How does that translate to specific symptoms or diseases when that circadian is fast forwarded like that? What does that mean to the patient, to the person with the symptom?
You know, there's a lot of dysregulated cortisol and hormone dysregulation that I'll see when I test various salivary panels or look at different urine or blood work. The symptoms these days, or I should say the research these days, shows circadian disruption with pretty much every diagnosed disease or every chronic illness condition. So it could be something as seemingly like, why would inflammatory bowel diseases rely on circadian rhythm? But they do. And so the research is really robust in how almost every chronic disease is tied to a disruption in this clock mechanism in the brain, which is why I started to lay this as the foundation. This morning light from sunrise and also what I call UVA rise is the foundation for people to start to apply to give their body back the timing it needs so that the body knows when to make certain hormones. So for example, in the example that I talked about with cortisol disruption or dysregulation or hormone dysregulation, we rely on the suprachiasmatic nucleus communicating that morning signal to the mitochondria to start to make pregnenolone. Pregnenolone is a master steroid hormone that can become cortisol, but it can become also all of our other steroid hormones as well. If we always miss out on that signal, clinically, I see this as someone who is just tired all the time. So very much just a fatigued state. They never feel like there's a part of the day where they're energized, except maybe a second wind at night, maybe around 9 o'clock at night. This is someone who's also likely going to have other flatline hormones or very much dysregulated hormones. And so they could have troubles with menstrual cycle. They could have trouble with conceiving. There's a lot of things that can go wrong when that gets dysregulated. And it's just because we're not tying in the light signaling to the body that it's used to receiving in order to make the hormones when we're designed to make them. And once we reestablish that, we really quickly can get things back on track without, you know, like you said, it's free. It's not like we're having to spend a ton of money on supporting our body with some very foundational strategies.
Yeah, a lot of bang for your buck. What is a kind of a practical, if you were going to give someone, a client, a protocol, what's kind of a basic, here's how many minutes you need at this time or whatever. What do you tell clients?
Number one, I tell clients, be aware of putting on some blue blocking glasses. And I recommend a decent pair of orange toned blue blockers that have them on. You should have them on at night before you go to bed, and they'll just be right on your nightstand. And so if you have to wake up and, let's say, use the bathroom or quickly check your phone before you go outside, you have those on first. So you're preventing the artificial bright signal from entering your eyes. And then as soon as you wake up, you go outside, and ideally you're getting time outside at sunrise. So about 3 to 5 minutes at sunrise, doesn't have to be a long time. You just have to set the signal. And then I really encourage clients to spend a little bit of a longer period of time outside during what is called UVA rise, which, you know, technically speaking, it's when the first appearance of ultraviolet light comes in someone's location. So that would be when the sun is 10 degrees above the horizon. And that's when the ultraviolet A appears. And that's another transition that the body has been designed to key in on to also affect other pathways in the body and in the brain. So just like that blue light appearance at sunrise triggered a lot of things that my circadian rhythm needed to receive. So for example, my mitochondria receiving that signal to start to make steroid hormones, that's also a pathway that triggers my brain to upregulate different neurochemicals like dopamine and serotonin and norepinephrine. at all these chemicals that I'm designed to make to really feel good to start my day. I'm really designed to feel like, oh, wow, yeah, I'm energized. I'm ready to roll. I got this. I'm focused. I got concentration. And so I encourage clients to do about a 20-minute walk, or if a lot of my clients are don't quite have the energy to start off with, to actually walk. So they just sit outside and maybe sky gaze or read a book and just sit outside for those 20 minutes, because that's where, again, they start to make a really big improvement, a noticeable change in how they feel, their mood, their energy, their concentration and focus. Those are the two things I really encourage in the morning. And then at night, around sunset or a little shortly after, as it's perceivably getting darker, I like to have clients, again, put on those orange tone blue blockers, because they block the artificial blue wavelengths of light from entering the eyes that we're going to be getting from things like our light bulbs and our screens into the evening. And when we block the artificial blue, we preserve our melatonin levels. We go to bed at an appropriate time. That melatonin is a hormone that then not only puts us to sleep, but runs a lot of important repair processes when we are asleep, like autophagy, apoptosis. And so it's really key to make sure that we're producing adequate amounts of it and maintaining it at night. And then, you know, you go to bed and you rinse and repeat. And so while it's maybe a time commitment of morning light of about 25 minutes, I feel like that's a small price to pay to feel a whole heck of a lot better.
Yeah, for sure. I agree 100%. What do you say to clients who maybe balk a little bit because they've been trained or taught that the sun's bad? It's going to give you cancer. Stay out of the sun. Put sunscreen on. Put your sunglasses on. It's going to damage your eyeballs. What do you educate them on there?
Oh, I tell them that, guess what? Morning sunlight, the sunrise light, has no UV light. So typically, they're taught that there's an association between ultraviolet light and damage or cancer. And so I say, well, guess what? How about you at least try to get outside for those 25 minutes, even before the UV light appears, and then go back outside at sunset. Or at least near sunset after the UV light has disappeared. And typically clients, just with that alone, start to notice a palpable change, to know that the light is doing something beneficial for them. And then they're more apt to take me up on my other suggestions when it comes to actually going out and getting into the light when there is UV light present. And I also let them know that the UV signaling that I'm talking about at UVA rise in the morning is through the eyes. So they could technically be sitting under under a tree and still be receiving the benefits. And so little by little, we can kind of baby step people into recognizing how much better they feel when they do these practices, to the extent that they'll reassess what they've been taught about UV light. And then they'll even start to, you know, get their full body into the ultraviolet B light to make the vitamin D through the skin the way the body was designed to do.
Right. Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Do you progress up to certain time commitments in the sun, or trying to develop a certain amount of tan or melanin, or how far do you go there?
Yeah, you know, I let people go based on how they feel. And I do think that, melanin, Dr. Ben, we could come back and talk a whole hour about melanin in and of itself. It's such a cool topic. But I do think that there is a benefit to making vitamin D and developing a tan in the summer without necessarily having to be outside and under the intense sun for hours and hours and hours. So I'm talking like, it can be done with middle of the day sun in about 15 to 35 minutes, most days of the week. And that should give you all the exposure to sunlight that you need in order to make adequate amounts of vitamin D. And a lot of people don't realize when we make vitamin D through the skin, we also make dozens of other metabolites that they thought were biologically inactive. And now we know that they're very important metabolites like lumisterol, tacosterol. And so I like to say when we make vitamin D through our skin, we get the full spectrum of vitamin D as opposed to when we just take it through a supplement. It's nowhere near the same. And so, I don't think we have to sunbathe all day long. I do feel like there is something to be said about making sure we are also aware, because the body will give signals when it suns itself too much. We have endogenous built-in mechanisms that we can start to read and become familiar with when the body says, okay, had enough UV light. You know, one of the first things that it's going to do is we're going to start to develop that melanin. And after the melanin develops, we also then are going to get a slight erythema response. And that's because there's a connection between the UV light entering the eyes and striking the skin and stimulating some endogenous sun protection factors in our skin. Stuff like urocanic acid can get deposited in the skin. Melanin can get deposited in the skin as a UV filter. And when the body has sunned itself enough, that's when it starts, the skin starts to pinken a little bit. And that pinkening is not a sunburn. It's just what's called an erythema response, which is the body's way of saying, okay, pull yourself out of the direct sunlight. You know, put a long sleeve shirt on, go inside for a little while. We've received enough light to get all the benefits that you need right now.
Okay, awesome. I think this might be a good little break time. Carrie, what's the best way for people to follow you or talk a little bit more about how they could get in touch with you if they want to become a client, or what all do you have to offer?
Sure. I have a website, carriebwellness.com, which will give people access to a lot of things, including how to work with me one-on-one, how to join my membership community, where I do 2 live Q&As every week where people can bring their questions and we can work together. It also has access to all the different online courses that I've taught, things like adrenal health, thyroid health, mitochondrial healing. So really great ways to kind of start to get yourself into this information a little bit more if this piques your interest. And I love posting. I post pretty much every day on Instagram at Carrie D. Wellness. It's a great way also to kind of get this information in bite-sized pieces to start to apply it.
Awesome. Y'all check that out, carriebwellness.com. That's Carrie, C-A-R-R-I-E, B as in boy, wellness.com. We will be right back. Y'all stick with us, and we'll continue our conversation with Carrie. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the Cure. Okay, guys, we're back. Welcome. CarrieBWellness.com's website. We're talking with Carrie about light. We're going to maybe shift a little bit into water, electrons, mitochondria. I know Alicia might have a question or two over there, too. Don't want to put you on the spot, Alicia. But Carrie, talk to us a little bit about, so you discovered Jack Cruz, did a deep dive there into the research and all the folks that he learned from, started doing the light stuff and started feeling better, started, I'm assuming, working with some clients that are feeling better. But on your website, you talk about water, the exclusion zone. We've had Gerald Pollack on the show before, Tom Cowan on the show. They talk about the exclusion zone, and of course, electrons and mitochondria. So in the next half of the show, we can go any direction you want, but I'm kind of interested in the water for sure. But kind of where'd your journey go next? What'd you learn next? What are the most fascinating things for you in your learning journey?
Yeah, you know, a couple of things. After recognizing how light was such a key signal to my body to just organize all of its tasks and physiology, that's when I started diving, like you said, into water and realizing that what I had been taught about water, or I guess how I perceived water in the body, was very different than how water actually operates. And, you know, Dr. Pollack and Dr. Cowan are 2 amazing resources when it comes to learning about this really amazing phase of water inside of us. But that was really an aha moment for me. You know, it was like, wait a second, I am actually able to derive energy from things other than food, right? And so the way that I view one of the main energy currencies of the body is electrons. And I think that that's a very traditional thing that people can understand because, you know, those of us who have studied the mitochondrial electron transport chain, that's what we recognize that food breaks down into. Food ultimately becomes electrons that get funneled to the mitochondria, and the mitochondria make water and ATP. And so that happens with food, but I don't think people ever realize, at least I never realized, that we were actually able to acquire electrons from more than just food. You know, there's a doctor, the light doctor, Dr. Alexander Wunsch. His estimates are that we can actually only need 1/3 of our electron energy from food, and we can get the other 1/3 from things like earthing and sunlight and this exclusion zone water that's inside of our bodies. And so as I started to explore water, it was a game changer. I just resonated so deeply with water, from how it creates a battery of energy for us to how it can help us detoxify and exclude toxins, to how it actually acts as an antenna for all of the frequency information in our environment that we can't physically see or feel. And so once I realized that, I really started thinking, okay, well, how can I optimize this exclusion zone water for me and my clients? What does that look like? How does that happen? And then how can I actually get my clients to tune in to the frequencies that tell their body it is safe? And so that's where I went next. I'm willing to dive into any of those areas if you are.
Yeah, let's do. How do you approach the water?
So, you know, first and foremost, I recognize that while our body is approximately 70% water, the water that we drink only makes up some of the water that's in our body. The water that we drink matters. But what I began to realize was that the water that is made inside of my mitochondria really presents my body with its true intracellular hydration. And so I started to say, okay, well, what is going to make my mitochondria healthy? And it turns out that my mitochondria are very keen on tying in to a couple of things. They absolutely want to know what time of day it is. They absolutely want to know what stressors are in my environment. They're very perceptive to psychological stress and also other stressors that we can't even perceive. So I had no idea that most light bulbs, most LED bulbs flicker. They turn on and off 100 times a second. And that flicker, while it's not necessarily, I can't perceive it with the naked eye, if I ever were to take a slow motion video of bulbs, and then replay the video, I would see that these bulbs are turning on and off. It's like a strobe lit environment. And my mitochondria and nervous system are keying in on this information, and they're perceiving whether or not my body is in a stressful situation. And I know I sure as heck felt like I was in a stressful situation when I was under flickering bulbs all day long. And so I start to work with clients to talk about, okay, well, our mitochondria make our water. They're perceptive of our environment. This water becomes a battery of potential energy, because when the mitochondria, when they take electrons from food, from earthing, even from the exclusion zone water itself, they take these electrons and funnel them through different steps along their electron transport chain. And step four is where water is made. And this water that's H2O, when it comes into contact with biological surfaces in the body, which are everywhere, it structures and organizes itself to become this lattice, this hexagonal lattice of H's and O's. So when the typical H2O structures itself into this lattice that Dr. Pollack has termed the exclusion zone, it no longer is H2O, and instead it becomes H3O2. It has a slightly different chemical makeup. And when you do quote unquote chemistry math, right, to count the protons and the electrons to kind of see what the charge of this new molecule is, we recognize now that this arrangement of water has a negative charge, unlike H2O that we would drink in a glass, which is neutral. And that really surprised me. And I said, okay, well then that's negative charge. Then, and this exclusion zone water forms next to all biological surfaces. It must mean that this exclusion zone water is a conduit to funnel electrons wherever they're needed in the body at any given time. So mitochondria in need of electrons have a direct pathway beyond even food, beyond the biochemistry, in order to receive electrons and use them to make more water. It's such a cool cycle when you recognize that the body has the ability to do this. And so beyond that then as well, if electrons are a currency of health, and it turns out that the majority of the water inside of the cell is this negatively charged water. So it means that in order for a cell to maintain health, it has to have adequate exclusion zone water. It's not a hidden fact that a cell needs to have a certain number of negative millivolts in order to maintain its health. And as the cell drops in that negative charge, that becomes associated with more and more cellular dysfunction, including things like cancer. And so it's like, okay, this is very, very important. So beyond setting the circadian rhythm and the mitochondria cueing in on the circadian rhythm to maintain their health and their ability to make this water, beyond the mitochondria perceiving stressors in the environment, Dr. Pollack's research really alluded to the fact that infrared wavelengths of light expand this exclusion zone water. They charge up this water battery and allow the body to maintain this beautiful negative charge where it's needed. And so that's where I started playing around with things like sauna or red light therapy panels, or even things like movement to the extent that it started to generate heat in my body, or cold plunging, which one doesn't think generates infrared, but cold plunging causes the mitochondria to actually make more infrared heat. They run warmer than the rest of the body. And so all of these things became strategies in my toolbox to work with clients in order to support their health. And they all intersect in very similar pathways at maintaining mitochondrial health and maintaining this exclusion zone water in the body. And then beyond that, that exclusion zone water is a conduit for Earth's electrons. Again, it might sound woo, right, until you dive into the research, but you realize that the surface of the Earth is electron rich, and we're able to actually funnel that electrical charge into us to reestablish it where it's needed. It could be around the red blood cells to help with blood flow. It could be to the mitochondria to help with electron transport chain flow. It could be to a site of injury where a lot of electrons are needed to act as antioxidants to calm inflammation. And all of this happens through this exclusion zone water network of the body. And so just, you know, gradually layering on these strategies, infrared, cold plunging, red light therapy, touching the earth, going into nature then to be in calming frequencies, have gone a very, very long way in laying a firm foundation to support all of my clients.
Yeah. And I just want to emphasize for the listeners, and Carrie mentioned the word woo-woo, so I'm going to pair off that. You know, sometimes people make fun of people that go out in nature and do whatever. I mean, but guys, remember, our great-great-great-grandparents, all they did was eat organic before it was labeled organic, non-GMO, you know, vine-ripened, local, whatever. You know, that's what we ate for all these years, all these generations. All our ancestors were in touch with the earth. They didn't have these synthetic soled shoes that we're all wearing. They had moccasins or leather soled shoes or some way the electrons could come through. They were actually in the dirt. They were on their hands and knees in the garden or at the wash tub washing in the creek and all these things. They were outside. They were in nature. They were connected to the dirt. They were, you know, all these things that are so easily termed woo-woo, which I'm with you, Carrie, because, I mean, I get the same comments, and I mean, I'm a pretty regular guy. I didn't grow up understanding any of this, and now I highly recommend it because, again, let's go full circle. We're all about health. We've got really sick patients come and see us, really sick clients come and see Carrie, and the body knows what to do to fix itself. It just needs the right inputs, and it needs really to get rid of the wrong inputs almost more than anything. Get the wrong stuff out. Morley Robbins' root cause protocol has starts and stops, and it's really real simple. Get all this modern stuff out that's killing us and just bring back this ancestral stuff. So this really is just going back to this wisdom and knowledge that was just built into us, passed down generation to generation. We've lost it. We've insulated ourselves, and we've become modernized in so many ways, and we don't realize how much it is impacting our health. And then we jump into a clinic, conventional or integrative, and you spend a lot of time, money, and effort. But wait a minute, what if we just did the foundational stuff? Like Carrie said, go for 5 minutes outside first thing in the morning. These basic, basic things. So that's awesome, Carrie. I love how you've explained all this. And, you know, you've convinced me to make this a priority. I've heard Jack Cruz talk about, you'll never miss another sunrise, I think is what he tells his clients. And he doesn't even go to the diet first. And someone wants to lose 100 pounds, he doesn't even talk about the food. He talks about the light. I mean, that's how impactful it can be. So, Alicia, I know maybe you have some thoughts, comments. I want to give you an opportunity. I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but do you have something you want to ask Carrie?
It's okay. Yeah. So I'm so glad that we are going this direction with things. And I, as far as like the water and how it connects with, you know, the fascia in the body and these collagen strands and how it's such a fast communication of the body. That's how this quantum world works. I was hoping that you could touch on that. And then just for our region where we live, it's major farmland, especially cotton. And so we've got high pesticides levels here, and especially glyphosate. And so if you could just maybe touch on how that affects our collagen in our bodies and this communication, this quantum communication in our bodies, and the best ways that we can mitigate that.
Great.
Yeah. Thanks, Alicia. Yeah, anything else, Dr. Ben, you want to add to that?
No, you go right. Go for it.
Sure. You know, no, that's great, Alicia. Absolutely. So, you know, one of the most interconnected highways in the body is what we would call the connective tissue or the fascia. And I don't know about you, Dr. Ben, but like when I was doing anatomy class, I was taught, oh, just cut away that stuff so we can see the more important parts, right?
Yeah, rip that off.
Right, yeah, just rip right through that. That's not important. But, you know, it turns out that this connective tissue, when we actually view it in the body, which, you know, if people aren't squeamish, you have to look up the recordings, the videos from a French hand surgeon named Jean-Claude Gomberto. He started actually showing the fascia in real life. What does it look like? And it's like the most glistening, shining, beautiful substance that's always remodeling itself and changing. And this connective tissue, it actually goes and penetrates every cell. And so it's surrounded by water. It's this hydrated network of this exclusion zone water. And we can sometimes feel it in the broader patches, things like the fascia on the side of my leg, my IT band, or maybe the fascia that's in my low back, the thoracolumbar fascia. But that fascia then, as we get smaller, so a smaller and a smaller scale, it actually becomes the collagen fibers in my extracellular matrix. It penetrates into the cells through intermembrane proteins, and it actually becomes the cytoskeleton or the fabric or the support inside of the cell. And it goes even finer to a finer and finer mesh into the nucleus, and it actually becomes the nuclear matrix or the fabric or the support inside of the nucleus. And it's all this big interconnected web, all surrounded by exclusion zone water. And we know that exclusion zone water is a conduit for electron flow, for electricity. And I didn't mention it, but it's also a conduit for proton flow. And so, you know, it was a really fascinating researcher who I've loved to study, Albert St. Georgi, who won the Nobel Prize, but also started to think, wait a second, like things are happening way too fast in the body. Like the body can adapt and change at such amazing pace. Something has to be the prime communicator of the body beyond biochemistry. And so he started to think of the idea of these interconnected electrical flows, the electron flow, the proton flow, as a means of quantum communication, that the body can happen at such a, that communication can happen at such a small scale, but at such a fast speed. And so that's what Alicia was talking about. And really a prime portion of this connective tissue matrix, which my favorite researcher here is James Oshman, Dr. Jim Oshman. He terms it the living matrix, because it's a hydrated matrix that we use to intercommunicate throughout the whole entire body. What he found, and what also even Dr. Pollack and other researchers have found, is that it's in particular the collagen network here, which is a protein found in this matrix, that the collagen plays a huge role in allowing the body to communicate at these lightning fast speeds. That collagen folds itself in a certain way. So it folds itself into these triple helices. And the way it folds itself is these triple helices, it actually forms what are called water nanotubes. So basically tubes of just water linked together that actually become conduits through which we can funnel all of these electrical charges and the energy and the information that the body needs in real time. And the unfortunate part about glyphosate is that collagen contains, the majority of collagen is an amino acid called glycine. A building block of collagen is an amino acid called glycine. And glycine makes up every third amino acid in collagen. And for collagen to fold into these beautiful triple helices and to form these water nanotubes so that we have this instantaneous communication highway, the glycine is very much needed. And glyphosate, the gly in glyphosate, acts very similarly to glycine in the body, but it disrupts the collagen folding. It disrupts the activity of glycine. So when we're in an area or consuming a lot of glyphosate, which unfortunately I think the majority of us have been doing all of our lives, whether we try to or not, glycine can replace glyphosate can replace glycine in the collagen, which just begins to change our ability to communicate throughout the whole entire matrix. It's like roadblocks in the matrix. It's interference fields. It's interference. And so I do work with some clients who I think have been really glyphosate exposed to help them get rid of the glyphosate and then give them adequate sources of glycine to help to reestablish this continuous highway so that there's no blocks in the communication flow.
Yeah, just for the listeners, probably most people around here know glyphosate. That's Roundup. That's the main ingredient in Roundup, this Roundup Ready cotton that we're all around. So shout out to all the organic cotton farmers out there. I know it's a hard job fighting those weeds, but keep after it. Besides the glyphosate, Carrie, what are the things that would damage that matrix of collagen that you're talking about?
You know, the other things that just are damaging in general to the body. So there's a special affinity for heavy metals like aluminum. You know, there's also the challenges with fluoride. Fluoride can be really disruptive of the collagen. And so I know a lot of us have fluoridated water. I grew up with fluoridated water. And so all of these things by themselves might not be enough to tip the scale towards disease. But when you start layering all of them one on top of the other, and then you add in circadian rhythm dysfunction, you add in never getting into nature, never touching the earth with bare skin, you can see how it compounds itself to really create some massive dysfunction. And as you said, if we start to recognize what's disruptive and start to add in what's supportive, the body knows what to do. So I encourage my clients to find the small local farms, the farms that maybe can't afford to be certified organic, but still have organic growing practices, and start to eat as much of that type of food as they possibly can. I encourage them to try to get non-fluoridated water, so get a filter that removes the fluoride from the water. Heavy metals are a whole other topic, right? There's different ways that the body can get rid of those, from things like sauna therapy to I use a couple of different binders or different strategies to support clients with that. And as we layer these things on, the body all of a sudden reaches a tipping point where it's got the energy and the information without the disruption that it needs. And the healing process happens pretty quickly from that point on.
On the glyphosate, it may be too big or complex of an answer, but do you have certain specific things for removing the glyphosate that you found effective?
Yeah, you know, one of them is actually a very unheard of binder called Takasumi, which is a carbonized bamboo that's been used in Japan for quite some time. And there's only one company that I know of that makes it that I love, called Supreme Nutrition Products. They recognized a while ago a need for very good quality but gentle binders, and that's one of them that binds the glyphosate. It also binds up heavy metals as well. I've had clients really love the Takasumi. You know, and the body also knows what to do when you give it glycine and give it appropriate sleep. It'll go through a process called autophagy, where it says, "Oh, that." Collagen's broken there. We got to get rid of that glycine. It's jamming up the process. Let's get rid of that glyphosate and let's put a glycine in there instead. And so things like even like bone broth and eating the collagenous sources of meat are also a good way if we're just giving our body adequate glycine and appropriate sleep to let the body do its own thing. And then, you know, there's other things too with the glyphosate that I've done that are maybe a little bit just more case by case basis. But the other thing that I'd like to highlight here is with aluminum, which I think is really a big deal also with this whole process, I'm really digging some silica-rich water. And it's a way to just gently support the body through this process. It's not about like pushing these crazy detoxification strategies, but it's about giving the body a couple of really gentle things that it can use to support getting rid of the things that no longer serves the body.
Yep, I agree 100% on that aluminum. I'm glad you mentioned the sleep too. That's just such a key foundational thing. And I like to remind my patients, the growth hormone, I like to call it repair hormone. The body's designed to repair from all the oxidative stress and damage that it incurred during the day when you're out working and doing and thinking and stressing and all the things you're doing. And then at night you sleep and the body goes into repair mode and it starts to fix so many things. So you need to be able to sleep. And if you're not sleeping, that's one of the first things to attack before you even think about diet. a good night's sleep is so important for detoxification and repair. So thank you for mentioning that, Carrie. Real quick, we have probably 7 or 8 minutes maybe. Breathing. We've had a couple guys on the show, James Nestor, Patrick McCown, on breathing techniques. Do you get into that with your clients? How much do you stress that? Do you have certain breathing techniques you recommend?
Yeah, I do, actually. I do, simply because the oxygen that we breathe ultimately becomes water in our cells. It's that oxygen that we breathe that goes to the mitochondria, and that's step four. It makes that intracellular water that we structure into this exclusion zone network throughout the body. And so if I find a client has dysfunctional breathing mechanics, it's pretty much a low-hanging fruit to help them correct, just to make sure that at the most basic level, they're oxygenating their body appropriately. In conjunction with that, I find that it goes hand in hand. If I suspect someone is a dysfunctional breather, some of the symptoms that pop up for me are anxiety, or kind of always on edge, or a nervous system that's a little bit, really easy to trigger. And that's because with this dysfunctional breathing, you'll see a disruption or in the ability to tolerate carbon dioxide. I'll do something Dr. Ben called a Bolt score, which is one of the things that Patrick McCowan recommends in what he teaches. But it basically tells me how long can someone go between breaths before they feel air hunger. And I get the majority of my clients who are dealing with a lot of mitochondrial dysfunction, the Bolt score is around 6 to 8 seconds. That was me also. I was a 7-second Bolt score, which means that I wasn't tolerating an adequate carbon dioxide buildup between breaths. I was overbreathing, basically. I was overbreathing and not getting the oxygen released to the tissues, because carbon dioxide buildup is what releases oxygen to my mitochondria. And so I help clients with some very simple practices with that. If they've got a Bolt score below 15 or so, things like just conscious breath holds. It really is amazing how if it's like, okay, take a break and just hold your breath back. And then when you resume breathing, try to resume it as calmly as possible. Or I also have clients who, if I suspect them of being chronic mouth breathers, we will talk about potentially using mouth taping as a strategy. I found that to be very beneficial for myself, especially at night. I was most definitely a chronic mouth breather. And other things, just even when someone's on a walk, just doing, like I said, these breath holds where you're just trying to hold your breath to build up that carbon dioxide tolerance. And, a little goes a long way. If we are consistent with these things, it's not like we have to do a 60-minute breath practice every day. I mean, if someone loves that, that's great by all means. But I am finding, what's the minimum effective dose? And if someone is aware of their breathing, aware of keeping their mouth shut while they're breathing, and occasionally doing these conscious breath holds, they can pretty quickly raise that Bolt score, which means that they're getting better oxygenation to the mitochondria to make water, and then to allow that water to become that battery of exclusion zone energy throughout us.
Awesome. Alicia, do you have any other questions?
Well, if there's time, just a real quick touch on movement, the piezoelectricity, and how that supports the collagen and the water production of the body, too. I think, the movement lab here is working on really encouraging people to get moving in functional ways. And we also have a cold plunge, which is really nice. So whatever you want to share on movement, Carrie, would be great.
Sure. Yeah, I love your pillars over there. Great pillars. And so, yeah, movement is definitely so key, because of the fact that our movement generates free electrons. Our body, our muscles, our connective tissue are arranged in what are called a crystalline ordered way. It's a semiconductor crystal. It's just a very ordered, organized pattern in the body. And in that pattern, when we move, we create electrons. It's just a property of semiconductors. And so that's that piezoelectric effect. So that means that movement is yet another way that I can generate the currency of my body. I can generate my own electrons to fuel my mitochondria. I can generate the electrons to actually support anti-inflammatory healing in the body in the same way that earthing can do. And so that's really where I feel being sedentary is the most damaging. It's not necessarily about, oh, you're not burning any calories. I never talk about calories with my clients. when it comes to movement, I talk about we need to continue to generate this free electron flow, even if it's this beautiful, gentle movement like Tai Chi, or making sure we're actually holding our body up in the correct posture so that as we're moving naturally throughout the day, we're firing all of our muscles and we're moving throughout a full range of motion. All of these things go a long way just to, again, maintaining that energy currency of the body, that electron-rich body that supports the mitochondria, supports the exclusions of water, supports the inflammation. It's all connected.
Yeah, that's awesome. You've really brought so many foundational things in here without, again, not really talking about nutrition. Again, we're not downplaying nutrition, but in the 10 years I've been in the integrative world, I mean, we've focused on it too much, actually. We're backing way off that now because, well, it's just not right, the right thing to do, but there, you can get so much done. You're going to reach a ceiling if all you do is focus on nutrition, or like Carrie said at the top of the show in her story, exercise. That's the other one. I mean, some people just, the way they're exercising, too much exercise. College athlete, I just had a former Texas Tech soccer player, young lady, and that's her story. I mean, just crashed and burned with too much exercise. So, being balanced, doing all the things, like Carrie's mentioned, and on her website, you can go cruise through that, jump on there, join her stuff. As far as here locally, guys, Veritas Healthy Community, you can be a member of that community and get access to Ben Hunt in the Movement Lab, the Wellness Navigators who can walk you through some diet and lifestyle things, the classes we do, of course, the Merck and all the local products from the local farmers. And if you already are a medical member, well, you're automatically a VHC member too. So go get in the Movement Lab, get an appointment with Ben. That's on your account page online if you're one of our members. So I encourage guys and gals, y'all get in there, and Ben can even speak to, besides just the movement stuff, he can talk to you about breathing. He can talk, get you in the cold plunge. I did my first cold plunge about a week ago. Don't want to brag, but I think it was like 55 degrees, and it was a good 5 minutes, pretty sure.
Yeah, I heard you rocked it.
My wife didn't hear this. She thinks I brag too much. All right. Carrie, closing thoughts in a minute or two here. Maybe put you on the spot. If we had, there's a really sick person out there listening, thinking of maybe joining your, seeing you online or coming here to see us. Just in general, really sick folks, what would you encourage them with? Start with fill in the blank. Is there one thing that you would say this is probably the most important or the easiest or the best or most bang for the buck or however you would see it?
Step two, it's just go outside whenever you can or sit by an open window. Get that natural light because that signals so many processes in the body. That's one. And number two is view your body as the thriving version you know it can be. Drop the disease label, drop the identity associated with your chronic illness, which is hard to do, but view yourself as the thriving version of yourself. Give your body the energy and the information, the mindset it needs to move forward, and then the input of the light, and it goes a long way towards starting you off on this process.
Yeah, that's awesome. What a great way to end it. Light, so much in the physical and in the spiritual. Okay, Carrie, thank you so much. Again, her website, Carrie, Carrie, B as in boy, wellness.com. Yeah, and on Instagram, Carrie B Wellness on Instagram. Y'all can follow her there, check her stuff out. She's all over the place on YouTube and great information. Carrie, thanks for sharing. Thanks for joining us today. Alicia, thank you for being a part and for you and Ben and all y'all are doing and for introducing me to Carrie. Carrie, you're welcome back anytime. Let us know if we can be of assistance to you in any way. Appreciate you coming on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Ben. I've had a blast chatting with you both.
All right, everybody. This is Dr. Ben Edwards. This will be archived on our website, veritasmedical.com, under the resource tab, podcast link, and also on iTunes under You're the Cure. So y'all spread this far and wide so people can be well and not need the failing healthcare system. I didn't mention a headline I read yesterday. 100,000 nurses retired during COVID. Another 800,000 are set to retire in the next year. The healthcare system continues to implode, and the best way to not have to worry about that is to not need it. So go get well. Remember, you're the cure. Go get informed, get supported, and go be healthy. All right, we'll be back next week with another great show. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the cure.